Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
All right, and welcome back to the Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast. How is everybody? It is 2 days before Christmas, and it was the 1872 Cup last night, and we are moving up in the world. We are coming from you to you live, sorry, from the Well Podcast Studio. Look at us, we're on sofas. This is serious. Matt, Alan, how are you?
Good, mate. It's good to treat yourself at Christmas, so...
Yeah.
Exactly. And we're also treating the listeners, because this probably sounds a hell of a lot better than what we give you from the boardroom of my office, usually.
Yeah.
No hula hoops, though.
No hula hoops, which is a shame, but, you know, we can't have everything, can we? Thanks again for joining us. You'll usually get us on Twitter, at Thistle Rugby Pod, on Instagram, Thistle_Rugby_Pod, and we've got a bursting mailbag, which we're going to be getting into later. That is thethistlerugby@gmail.com. Have a look at the agenda. Lots and lots of news, signings all over the place at both sides of the M8. And obviously last night was the 1872 Cup at Murrayfield, so we're going to be going through Edinburgh's big win against Glasgow last night. We then have an 1872 quiz sent in by loyal listener Kevin Miller. Thank you very much for that. And we've also had a really good chat with Sevens player Robbie Ferguson, who helps us have a look back at how the team has got on in Cape Town and Dubai. And then we will finish up with a look back of the year, and we will name our player of the year each. How does that sound, guys?
Can't wait. Let's do it.
That sounds okay.
Sounds all right. Very happy to be here, aren't you, Alan? Yeah. Come on, it's Christmas.
I fucking hate Christmas.
Well, why don't we start with some good news? Even you can probably say this is positive news. Grant Gilchrist, Edinburgh and Scotland second row, has re-signed for Edinburgh for 3 years, taking him right through to 2022. That's a big bit of business.
Yeah, and also the first three-year deal that seems to have come out of the SRU in about a year.
Yeah.
So, no, I think in terms of that team, there's that spine, which is McAnally, Gilchrist, probably Watson in that pack.
Yeah.
And which was shown, and we'll get onto about last night. Mm. So I think locking him down, he's clearly, I know McAnally's captain, but he's clearly like a leader.
Yeah. And I think, remember when he first came on the scene for Scotland, they made him captain very early on.
Was it Vern Cotter?
Yeah, I think so. And I think he's always been earmarked as a potential future Scotland captain, or you know, a leader, as you say. I think he's up there with probably our second best, if not our best lock, actually, increasingly.
I'm increasingly thinking he's ahead of Johnny Gray.
I just think he offers a bit more dynamic.
Yeah.
You guys slaughtering the Johnny Gray cow this morning, saying he's not the best second row in Scotland.
Well, I still think he is, but I think Gilchrist is is pushing him now.
Yeah. I also think...
I did tweet that and got quite a lot of heat about that.
You, oh, really? you can't say a bad word about Johnny Gray. Particularly not. The Glasgow fans
Edinburgh
on Twitter...
bias.
The Glasgow fans on Twitter go absolutely bonkers if you say a bad thing about Johnny Gray.
Yeah.
But Johnny Gray does complete 102% of all tackles.
So good bit of business there from Grant Gibbs. I think the last three-year deal was Kinghorn. Edinburgh did a three-year deal for Kinghorn last year.
Yeah.
So that is decent. Down the road, though, Glasgow's big week of signings has continued. So they have, since we last spoke to you on Monday, they've signed George Horn, Adam Hastings, as we discussed on the pod on Monday night, Hooker Grant Stewart, Nico Matuwali, which I don't think they were originally planning to do this week, but they have done it, and Scott Cummings. And if the silhouettes are to be believed, Hugh Jones is going to be added to that list later on today. So what do you make of that clutch of signings for Glasgow?
Yeah, I think it's a good mix of kind of young young players and a bit of experience. I think actually like signing Matuwali is quite important as well. I just think he's just always going to score you like 7-8 tries a season.
Yeah.
You know, particularly against the sort of when people are away on international duty, he just comes in and is just a class above a lot of the guys he comes up against. So,
yeah, he scores so many tries against teams like the Dragons during like the Six Nations and things like that. So, yeah.
No, I think overall it's good business.
I don't think Nico was originally the fifth of the seven silhouettes, though.
No, definitely not.
No, he wasn't.
But the Glasgow Warriors are pushing it as he's the fifth of the seven.
But really?
Who
I'm sure we thought it was Xander Ferguson.
Oh, yeah.
And they do look really different. So I don't know what's happened in terms of whether...
Do you think one's maybe fallen off and they had to slide Nico in?
Do you think Xander's just like, I'm going to wait and see how the nuke performs and then try and like super increase my deal off the back of the 1872?
He should get a massive deal off the back of the number of penalties the nuke gave away last night. Yeah. But we will come on to that. That's all good news from Glasgow, but some bad news coming off the back of the game last week. George Turner has had surgery and he's going to be out for up to 10 weeks. So if you add on to the fact that Fraser Brown is out for 6 to 8 weeks as well, and Glasgow are looking very thin on the ground, and Scotland.
Yeah, I think with Glasgow now, obviously there's Grant Stewart and you've got Kevin Bryce, who has actually sort of been playing prop for the most of the last couple of years and not really for Glasgow. And then you have, supposedly, Robbie Smith as well from Ayr is sort of the young, academy player.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, another injury there. And maybe thinking of like getting in a medical joker or something. I don't know. Maybe it's not worth it, but it looks pretty thin on the ground when you've got some big games coming up.
Well, it also means that Scotland have got McNally and then what, Ross Ford?
It's not so bad for Scotland. It's worse for Glasgow.
But Ford's not even getting on the bench for Edinburgh.
Dave Cherry.
Also, Stephen Jones actually gave a specific shout-out to Jake Kerr in the Leicester win yesterday.
Oh, really?
Did he?
Yeah. Was he starting?
No, he was on the... Plotter now started.
But oh, he so did.
Stephen Jones was like, great resurgence from Leicester, specifically Jake Kerr or something, did very well. So,
are
looks
we
like...
Worth a look?
Yeah.
Does that mean we like Stephen Jones now?
No.
It's going to take a hell of a lot more to turn that one around. Last bit of news before we kick on to talk about the 1872 Cup. Glasgow forwards coach Jonathan Humphreys has been officially announced as part of Wayne Pivac's Wales coaching side. What do you think of that? Do you think it's a big loss for Glasgow?
I think Glasgow's forwards in the last year have been better. I mean, maybe not yesterday, but I think overall it's been improvement. And I'm sure he's played a part in that, as has Dave Rennie, I'm sure. It's not the end of the world.
I wonder, I mean, I was thinking of a sort of replacement. You would think, potentially, can any of the club coaches step up, or are we going to get another sort of imported coach?
Import, definitely.
I don't know
who would step up, particularly when you've got Super Six coming up. They're presumably the most promising young coaches.
Yeah.
Maybe Kenny Murray sort of becomes like the full-time forwards coach.
Yeah.
I don't know. It'd be nice to see that sort of promotion for a young, youngish Scottish guy. But
yeah, you would think potentially someone like a Steve Laurie would actually be fit to go across and just take over that sort of forward role, if you're seeing that as that pipeline.
Yeah, I suppose though, someone like him has never had any professional coaching experience.
Yeah, but you only get professional coaching experience from getting lured to your job.
Yeah, but you, but yeah, no, of course, but you could go in as assistant forwards coach or skills coach or something, you know, something a bit lower down the pecking order, and then work your way up.
Fair.
But I think they'll get Dave Rennie's like got a mate in Manawatu.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'll plug someone out that way.
Yeah. Like, fine.
I'm like unknown Mitre 10 coach.
Yeah, he's
come over and get the job.
Yeah, really good.
Well, that is all the news, but I'm just going to finish up with a couple bits of correspondence. Thanks a lot for all your emails, guys. It's thethistlerugby@gmail.com, so please do get in touch. This one came through last week from listener Matthew Sumption. He says, "Hi, lads. Just wanted to say how much I've enjoyed listening to the pod over the last month. I've just had to take time out of my master's studies due to issues with my mental health, and discovering this enjoyable romp through Scottish rugby every week is just the tonic I needed to help me in my recovery. I've listened extensively to the back catalogue of fearful optimism and par quality chat and top quality quizzes whilst road cycling, in the gym, and before counselling sessions, and I hope that this doesn't make it too sentimental to say that has made a real positive difference to me in what has been a tough month or so. Edinburgh being top of their European group doesn't hurt either. Keep it up. You've earned a loyal listener, even though Chris Dean isn't my favourite centre yet." So you were doing very well right up until there, Matt. Yeah. You know, Chris Dean is obviously the best centre in Scotland. Thanks very much for that. Really appreciate you writing in, and hope 2019's your road to recovery keeps coming, and we will keep bringing fearful optimism about Scottish rugby to help you through that. So thanks a lot for getting in touch. Right, so should we get into the 1872 then?
Yeah, let's do it.
Matt, you were there.
I was, yeah.
You had really low down seats, but you were very close to Doohan van der Merwe.
Well, yeah, I was a bit gutted when we sort of, you figure out where your seats are and you're four from the front. But it was actually quite a good place to watch it from, and particularly, I think from that angle, the height of Henry Purgus' box kicks was magnified. They are ridiculous. It looked every single time like it was literally going out of the stadium, or going into touch at least, and then
How many beers did you have?
I had a few bottles of Tennent's. Paid for by card.
Oh, very good. So obviously, if you did not see it, I'm sure if you're listening to us, you were tuned in or at the 1872 yesterday. That was Edinburgh winning 23 points to 7. Two tries from big Doohan van der Merwe, with Van der Vaart adding the extras. Glasgow's try coming from Pete Horn, and a conversion from Adam Hastings, who I am sure we will come on to talk about his performance as we go. Starting off, Alan, Edinburgh have now won 6 of the past 8 1872 Cups. What went wrong for Glasgow?
I think we sort of talked about it last week, that whatever team kind of forced their style of play on the game was going to win.
Yeah.
And that was an Edinburgh style of game.
Oh, yes.
Very, like, set-piece dominated, pretty turgid affair, kind of quite a few unforced errors.
Mm.
And Edinburgh's pack just were always going to win that arm wrestle.
Yeah.
And, I think... And I also... I still think this in point that game means a little bit more to the Edinburgh players. I even think... In some certain situations, you look at McAnally and Gilchrist and how they really celebrate every single little thing.
Yeah.
And I just don't feel you get that from some of the Glasgow players.
I wonder if Glasgow think that their like real competition are now the likes of Saracens or in the Champions Cup or Leinster in the Pro 14. Those are sort of the big games. I think it was just, you know, if you can stop Glasgow getting that quick ball, cut them off at source, put pressure on 10 and 12 in particular.
Yeah.
You don't have to do that much to win. Like, Edinburgh didn't really sort of, you know, force a lot of play or create any chances, really.
No.
Well, it was interesting. The first 10 minutes, Edinburgh had all of the ball pretty much in or around Glasgow's 22, and they were pretty much doing one-up runs or just, like, they were trying to crash it up, and they weren't creating anything.
No.
Like, they were not getting in behind. They weren't asking any questions of the defence. It's interesting that the two Edinburgh tries were interceptions.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I actually think outside of the Doohan break, which kind of led to the Callum Gibbons yellow card, there really wasn't very much. I think Jacko van der Vaart had one little break, and then there was a Kinghorn offload. But yeah, for the you're right. Edinburgh weren't going to create two or three, four tries.
No, but... You know, that was the tactics. That was the approach to the match. You know, let's keep it tight. Cut off Glasgow at source. I think tactically it made perfect sense. Purgus box kicking. I mean, you said Jakob van der Vaart passed the ball only 8 times.
Yeah. I mean, we were looking at the stats earlier. So
8 times?
Jackal van de Volk passed the ball 8 times. I think Hernan Pergos was like plus 50.
Yeah, but yeah. They would have
pretty much
all been to forwards or points.
Direct,
and he kicked it a lot.
Yeah,
but Pergos' kicking, as I said, was excellent. It was really good. So
it just felt to me that
it makes sense.
Edinburgh's pack were just absolutely bad. Like, we were talking when Adam Ash came off after 60 minutes. I think we looked at each other, Alan, we were in the pub, and just said, I didn't know he was playing.
He struggled to assert himself.
And that's a guy who's really been like playing at the top of his game for the start of this season, really influencing games for Glasgow. And he was nowhere. Whereas I had a look this morning. Hamish Watson made 20 carries. You got like Bill Merton making like 15 plus.
Yeah,
like you just felt that Edinburgh just had so much more.
I feel as well. Watson really proved his value at the breakdown.
Yeah.
Whereas Glasgow just couldn't seem to get a foothold there. Like, they didn't seem to have a. I suppose in that back row they don't really have a fetcher. They're all fairly similar players.
Yeah.
As Watson obviously can carry, but he is very good over the ball as well. You've got someone like Chris Osario is probably the closest to that, but he's obviously sat on the bench.
I guess you look at the balance of that Edinburgh back row. Watson did really have... He was kind of let loose to try and do Jackal a lot.
Yeah.
Kind of Hamilton does a lot of the dirty work. He can do a little bit more kind of carrying in and around. Then Matter just kind of the like...
Hamilton's been good since he's replaced Richie.
He has, to be fair.
Like, he's done his role really well.
Yeah, he has.
What do you make of Glasgow's performance on the other side? Like, what do you think it was that went wrong?
I guess if we sort of work back, start with the front row, and specifically set piece.
Yeah.
I think...
They're terrible.
The showman had the nuke on toast. What a great sentence that is.
But I still don't fully understand why they took Darcy Ray out, because... Even when Darcy Ray came on, that scrum became much more solid. And then, you know, Grant Stewart again in the scrum isn't the biggest guy in the world. And at line-out time as well, they were struggling to execute basically every single most of line-outs.
I think Grant Stewart has an awful lot of potential, and I think he will go on to be a very good player. I don't think it just shows that there is a massive fall-off between the level that George Turner and Fraser Brown were operating at for Glasgow.
Yeah,
and what they've got below that.
Yeah, for sure.
But then I think even front row, and then you look at second row, they were just a bit smarter. Mm. Like, Grant Gilchrist was just making tackle after tackle. Even in Malls, BBT was just sort of wrapping them up. Like, it just felt like they were operating at a slightly higher kind of level
definitely.
To their sort of Glasgow teammates.
I kind of felt as well that Glasgow, it was kind of like watching Scotland in the Six Nations last year against Wales. You know, they've got a plan, they're trying to execute it, and it doesn't work. It's sort of like, you know, Russell and Hastings, quite similarly. Try and force it. Having Pete Horn outside you and Nick Grigg, you've not really got like a carrying option that can just settle things down. And you've not got really a big ball carrier there. I suppose you've got Matt Ferguson, but he struggled to really sort of make his mark on the game. And then that's what kind of leads to those interceptions, I think.
There's kind of two parts to that. One is they maybe don't have the types of players to even have a plan B, but it kind of feels in comparison to Edinburgh, who have McAnally, Gilchrist, Watson, Pergos, who are all appear to be quite strong leaders.
Yeah.
I just don't know who has that role for Glasgow, because I don't think Stuart Hogg does that.
It's hard to do it from fullback as well.
Yeah.
I suppose you've got, I mean, it's Pete Horn's 150th appearance.
Yeah.
But,
and I guess
he's only like recently really sort of like solidified his position in that team, I'd say.
Yeah.
And then you've got, Horn and Hastings inside him.
And I guess if you look at that pack specifically, I know Johnny Grace had a year as captain as Glasgow, but obviously now isn't captain.
Yeah.
And even in that back row, it doesn't feel like, you know, Callum Gibbons is sort of co-captain, but he's not the same sort of persona I feel as like a McAnally or a Gilchrist.
Yeah,
right.
He's very like a quiet lead by example sort of person.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why, maybe they were missing Ryan Wilson a little bit.
Possibly. I think he'll come in next week.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, they're going to have to change that up. Should we talk about Adam Hastings' night at the races?
I mean, we've said this before, he's Finn Russell like times two. Like, this is going to happen and we're just going to have to deal with it.
Yeah.
It was the first pass was probably unlucky in that
it was on. I think it was.
Yeah, and he was going for a little slip pass. The second one was essentially an assist.
Forward pass.
It was a forward pass.
That was the real. That just summed up like Glasgow trying things and then forcing it because they couldn't get anywhere.
And then actually the third thing, not it's not Hastings related, but how embarrassing was Tommy Seymour's attempted tackle on
Doohan.
Van der Merwe on the far side.
Yeah. Mate, it was like schoolboy level.
It was like me trying to tackle somebody. I was just like, I'm not interested in that.
It wasn't that bad.
Seymour didn't have the best of games either.
I think Seymour maybe just like, it felt to me that Glasgow just didn't care that much. And maybe that's just because because Edinburgh were battering them.
Yeah.
But maybe it's because they're 20 points ahead in their conference. Munster lost yesterday. Edinburgh needed a win way more than Glasgow did.
I was going to say it's a good outcome overall for rugby.
Good outcome for Scottish rugby. Like, Glasgow didn't really need that win.
Yeah, but I can't imagine that was the conversation like pre.
They picked their best team as well.
But that's fine. But I mean, like, I think imagine you still had to get up for it a couple of days before Christmas. Like they've done the job in Europe. They've had those two big wins against Lyon. Those would have been ones that mentally they've been shaping themselves up for.
Munster have lost the day before. Takes the pressure off.
That's true. They lost to Ulster, didn't they?
Yeah. Exactly. So like,
come on. I know. Maybe that's what it seemed like, but I just, I don't know.
It's unfair because Edinburgh put them under so much pressure and that's why they played so badly. But it seemed to me that they just couldn't be arsed.
I do think, especially that kind of the centres and wings for Edinburgh did a very good job, both in terms of just general kick chase and not giving like Hogg, Seymour or DTH any room to do anything. Mm. Like I do think, I think Dean and Johnston do work very well together. Mm. And I actually think also in defence, they were pushing up really hard. You said putting pressure on the 10 and 12.
Yeah.
Look, what I'm trying to say is Christine was man of the match.
I thought Darcy Graham was quietly impressive again. He didn't really get many chances with the ball, but
yeah,
he's just got, like, as we talked about, such a great attitude. Just gets involved, makes big tackles, actually.
Yeah.
For a small guy.
Yeah, he's brilliant.
He's been impressive.
He's been really, really, really good.
So an interesting stat about, obviously Doohan Van der Merwe had his sort of two tries plus, that break past Tommy Seymour. He's made 40 defenders beaten. So he's getting a minimum of 4 per game this season in the Pro 14.
Wow.
And it's basically 10 more than any other player in the Pro 14.
Really?
And for a player who, to be honest, doesn't try to get as involved much as other wingers.
I'm surprised he does that much.
Yeah.
He just seems to get on the end of stuff. He's a good finisher.
Yeah.
Fair play.
I think that Seymour thing, he's just very good at getting past the first man.
Do you remember when Edinburgh announced his signature and everyone was literally like, good one, who cares, who is this guy?
He's from Montpellier, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's like a Moneyball signing, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
He's really good. I hope he doesn't play so well that South Africa are actually like, he's quite good.
Yeah.
Maybe we need him to be good enough.
Yeah.
That we want him to stay
under
and play
fly
Scotland,
under the radar.
But not so good that South Africa identify that he's really good.
There's kind of quite a lot of players in the Scotland setup like that. Like, do you think Ollie Kebble could do a very... He could start for a Super Rugby team.
Yeah, definitely.
100%. Yeah, and Schoeman as well.
Yeah. I thought Schoeman was good. That was one of his best games, actually.
Yeah.
He's so... Up close, he is so big. Scarily big. Unbelievable. Yeah.
Well.
But yeah, I think we talked about it last week and it just goes back... It's that Edinburgh pack just were smarter and wanted it more.
Yeah.
And plus Purgos basically dictated that whole,
game. Very well. And what do we reckon about next week? Do you think it'll just home advantage count? Glasgow get the win?
I mean, as I said, Glasgow haven't lost in the Pro 14 at home in a year and a half.
Mm.
So you've got to be backing them hard.
They've only dropped 2 bonus points, it's cost them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I also think off the back of that, I think almost the manner of defeat will...
Yeah, we'll spark something a bit more.
Yeah.
So I think you've got to be looking at a Glasgow win next week. I think it'll be close, though.
Yeah, I think it'll be close. I think Edinburgh could win it. The thing about Scotland is it's like a pretty narrow pitch, if you think about it, compared to Murrayfield. It should suit them.
Yeah.
Do you think Edinburgh will make any changes?
With Richie maybe back?
Yeah. Is he back from injury?
I'm not sure. I apart from that, though,
I don't know why you wouldn't roll on.
Particularly in the pack.
That's a winning team.
Yeah.
Same team that beat Newcastle.
Mm.
It feels like in the backs, the only one that might be up for contention is Hickey or Jacko, but Jacko had a pretty good game.
He's pretty solid.
And, yeah, so, no.
The one other thing I wanted to talk about was Kinghorn following through on the kick and dropping the shoulder into Hogg.
Quite liked it.
I loved the little niggle that he gave him.
Yeah.
I think that's also the exact sort of thing Hogg would have done when he was like 20, 21 yeah. as well.
I found a video the other day of an old 1872 cup where it was Tom Brown was like tackled Stuart Hogg into touch. And then yeah. they had like a little Barney and then they like threw each other over the hoardings and it was great. Yeah, they both got carded and it was awesome. Like, it was so good.
Who's laughing now?
Well, yeah.
That's right. I'd love to see the Kinghorn's just like getting in his grill. I bet Hogg wasn't expecting that though.
No.
I bet Hogg gets really like deferential treatment.
Do you think Hogg sees him as a competitor? Do you think he's like Kinghorn's the winger now?
No.
For Scotland.
I think Seymour would see him more as a winger.
Yeah.
There is no realm where Hogg is not going to be starting at fullback
exactly.
in the World Cup. I think Hogg could have a shocking Six Nations.
Oh yeah.
And he's just got so
much. He's undroppable.
He's got so much credit in the
There's
bank.
There's no way.
But I think Seymour will be a little bit worried about Kinghorn. Also, I love the thing about Kinghorn is immediately after doing it, he sort of went to like really like overly apologise. But you could tell his eyes, he knew what he was doing.
Yeah, yeah. He definitely knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was so good. Well, we'll come back and we'll speak to you in the new year about how the second leg goes. Yeah. But why about a little Christmas 1872 cup quiz?
Yes, please.
I'm going to be the quiz master this week because usually I'm so bad in the quiz. I think people are tired of just hearing me going, I've got no idea.
Supposedly, I've just been told all the Edinburgh lads were in fingers last night celebrating.
Were they?
Yeah.
Good for them.
And my brother ruffled Simon Hickey's hair.
Well, good. I'm sure Simon Hickey remembers it as well as your brother.
Exactly.
Right, question one. You guys ready to go?
Yeah.
And this is courtesy of listener Kevin Miller. Thank you very much for doing this. And because it's a quiz from somebody else, these answers are probably correct. Although the first question is a bit funny. In which season was the first 1872 Cup match played?
I actually know this.
Do you?
Yeah.
Assuming that it's not
like 1872.
Yeah, I think you've got to go. So in which season was the first 1872 Cup match played?
I wish I hadn't said that now because if I get it wrong, I'll look like an idiot.
I have no idea.
Question two. Which side won the very first 1872 Cup? Now, I presume that means the one in 1872.
Oh, right.
I've got no idea. The first question says the first 1872 Cup.
Well, I mean, you've got a 50-50 chance, haven't you?
Yeah, I know.
Question three, which player is featured in the most 1872 Cup matches? It's 18 appearances for this person.
It's one player.
One person, 18 appearances. Okay. I'm rattling through, it's quite long. Question four, which player has scored the most tries in 1872 Cup matches? 7 tries for this individual. Happy with that? Do you want me to go back over any so far?
No, it's fine.
Question.
This is hard.
Question five. 224 players have featured in 1872 Cup matches since it was first introduced. Only 6 of those men have played for both Edinburgh and Glasgow in this fixture.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So 6 people.
We're going to name 6.
6 people have. Okay. I'll give you a point for each. Yeah. So 6 people have played in for Glasgow and Edinburgh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the final question. I think this was obviously designed with Matt and me in mind. So, Alan, you're going to have to get used to that, I'm afraid. First question, part one of question six. Name three players called Matt who have played in the 1872 Cup. And then there's also, you can name three players called David who have played in the 1872 Cup. There are one, two, three, four, five Matts.
Five?
Five Matts and six Davids.
Six Davids?
Six Davids.
Jesus Christ.
Right, have a bit of a think, lads.
How many, have you got any divs?
I've got two.
I've got one definite, one...
There's some fairly big names in the Davids and the Matts.
I've got three Matts.
Yeah.
I've got three, but I think my third one's wrong.
Should we go back to the start then?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's good.
All right, okay, answers. Question one, which season was the first 1872 Cup match played? Matt, what have you got?
2012.
I said 07-08 season.
07-08 is correct. And which side won the very first 1872 Cup?
St Edinburgh.
Glasgow.
It was Glasgow. Which player has featured in the most 1872 Cups? 18 times 4?
I said Al Kellock.
That's incorrect. Matt?
I said Gilchrist.
It was your man, Ross Ford.
I put Ross Ford initially.
Ford more years. How many more will he get? Which player has scored the most tries in 1872 Cup? Seven tries, four?
Seymour.
Incorrect.
I put Simon Webster.
Also incorrect. Tim Visser.
Oh, that was my other shout. Oh,
come on. This is great, being the quiz master.
I know. It's so much power.
So much more enjoyable than doing the quiz. Okay, so 224 players have featured in the 1872 Cup since it was first introduced. Six of them have played for both teams. Do you guys want to go turnabout on this?
Yeah.
Go on, Matt.
Lee Jones.
Lee Jones, correct.
Henry Purgos.
Henry Purgos is correct.
I said Purgos. Kevin Bryce.
Incorrect.
George Turner.
George Turner, correct.
Alex Allen.
Incorrect.
What?
Fraser Brown.
Incorrect.
Are there any more?
Yeah.
Three more?
Yeah. There's four. You guys have got what? Lee Jones, Purgos, and Turner. Yeah, three to come.
Yeah.
Ross Ford?
No.
He's never been in Glasgow.
The answer to everything. Should I give you them? You're gonna
No, yeah. give us a hint.
Yeah, give us some clues.
One of them has been on the podcast.
Mark Bennett.
Correct. One of them is probably one of our most talked about people ever on the podcast. Doesn't play in Scotland anymore.
Barclay?
No.
No, he hasn't.
Doesn't.
Come on, the king.
King?
King Pudding.
Oh, Duncan Weir.
Duncan Weir. And then the final one, born in New Zealand, played for Scotland.
Metcalf?
Gives a bit more than that. It's quite a few then.
Scrum half. Friends with Adam Ash.
Grayson Hart.
Grayson Hart.
Yeah.
There you go.
Right.
Okay, now give me your Matts and your Davids that have played in the 1872 Cup.
We should go one for one. Starting with Matts. I've got Matt Scott.
Correct.
Matt Fagerson.
Correct.
I've got Matt Smith.
Correct.
And I had Matt Fagerson as well.
And Matt Muschin.
Matt Muschin.
That's nice. I like that.
Very good. The final Matt is a Matt Shields.
Oh, he was a prop. He was like a
for Edinburgh
injury cover prop they signed last year when they had no props.
There you go. You got all the Matts. Five Matts. Six Davids to come.
Do you want to start?
David Denton.
Correct.
Dave Cherry.
Correct.
Oh, very nice. David Blair.
Correct.
Dave Callum.
Correct.
Oh, that is huge.
What you got left?
I'm out. That's all I've got.
I'm done.
David Young.
Prop,
for Edinburgh.
Prop.
And David Lemmy for Glasgow.
Forgot he played.
Yeah.
That was good.
So there you go. I actually wasn't keeping score.
Draw. Okay. I was going to give it to you, but I'll take the draw.
Maybe the winner was the friends we made along the way.
That's fair.
That was good. Brilliant. Well, thank you very much, Kevin Miller, for sending that in. I think that was a higher quality quiz than you can usually expect around these parts.
100%.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for that. Right, so that is 1872 part one all done. We'll be back, as we say, in the new year to talk about the second game and how that has gone. Earlier this morning, we spoke to Scotland Sevens player Robbie Ferguson, who's told us all about how the squad has got on in the first two tournaments of the series in Cape Town and Dubai. So here he is now.
So delighted to be joined in line by Scotland Sevens player Robbie Ferguson. Robbie, how are you?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. Nice to be on.
Yeah, good man. Do you get a bit of time off over Christmas, or is it still sort of heavy training schedule with the tournaments coming up?
Well, we just came back from obviously Dubai and Cape Town there, so we flew back and we got back on the Tuesday, so we had the rest of that week off, and then we've been in all this week, quite a tough week, just conditioning and things like that before Christmas, and now we're off till the 3rd of January in the build-up to the New Zealand and Australia leg, so we've got a little bit of time off from now to the 3rd, which is quite nice over Christmas and stuff, but yeah, it's still been fairly full on, still got a training programme and stuff, but yeah, a little bit of time off, which is nice.
Good stuff. And how have you guys found the season so far, obviously, with Dubai and Cape Town doing pretty well? What have been your thoughts so far?
Well, we kind of went into the tournament, we're like, set ourselves goals of like quarterfinals as sort of our minimum standard. So we were pretty happy to have made two quarterfinals. That's the first time in sort of my time with the Sevens that we've managed back-to-back quarterfinals like that, which is a really good thing. But I think there was a bit of feeling of frustration just out the back of the quarterfinals, not being able to really kick on in day two and get a win in one of these quarterfinals and try and get to semi-final. I think we were quite close against South Africa, which would have been amazing if we could have turned them over there. But there's a little bit of frustration. But yeah, we're happy with how it started so far.
And how does it feel to be picked as sort of co-captain at the start of the season? Obviously, you've only had one kind of real season of Scotland Sevens under your belt when you got asked for the gig.
It's a massive honour. Like, captain in your country, like any sort of level, is a massive honour. So, especially to do it with the Sevens team, alongside Jamie, who's a bit of a Sevens legend. So, it's a little bit daunting to begin with because, like you say, I've only had one real full season of Sevens under my belt. But that's a massive honour, and I'm really enjoying it so far.
And speaking of Jamie Farndale, how much grief did he get in the changing room after dropping the ball over the line against Fiji? Or was he a bit of a sorry soul?
Oh, he was very sorry for the next hour or so until the France game. But he didn't take much stick until we made the quarterfinals, and then once we managed to draw with France and guarantee a quarterfinal, he took a little bit of stick after that. And then anytime he tries to give anyone some jip in the WhatsApp group, there's a few screenshots of what people have said get flung in about him, which is quite good value.
And then obviously you've still got Scott Riddle in the squad. Is it good having him there as sort of, I think he's probably most caps of any Scotland Sevens player ever?
Yeah. Oh, no, Riddle is great. Like, that sort of, especially from a leadership point of view, he's great. Like, advice on the pitch, like reviewing things, stuff like that. It's kind of invaluable. He's almost like a player coach, and when he's on the field, it's really good to have him there as well. So no, he's a great asset for the team.
And is he still good at, what's the phrase, getting the puggy up before games?
Oh, Riddler loves the puggy, yeah. He loves it. He's still mad on the tunes and on the caffeine. Riddler loves the puggy, like.
So tell us what's up next. What are the next couple of tournaments coming up?
So we are off to, they've actually changed it, we're off to New Zealand next. So the Hamilton tournament, which is a move from Wellington, it was actually really, really good last year. I think the tournament in Wellington used to be one of the best, everyone said, but I think it died off and they moved it to Hamilton. And it was mental last year. The crowd was unbelievable. So that's a great one. And then from there, we fly on to Sydney and play the Sydney tournament as well, which again is really, really good. It's quite hot there, but another good tournament. So now that's where we're off to next. So looking forward to that.
And obviously this year, you were in Australia with the Scotland team at the Commonwealth Games. How was that, kind of having an opening ceremony and just sort of being capped for that sort of multi-sport event?
It was a little bit different because there was the Hong Kong tournament prior to it, so we sort of missed the opening ceremony, all that sort of stuff.
That's good.
The case of we flew in towards the end of the game. I think the Sevens was the last weekend of the Commonwealth Games, so we flew in that week, and it was a great experience. That's my first experience of a sort of multi-sport event like that, and it was really good. Like, the closing ceremony was great fun as well. Like, different athletes all like sort of train differently. You speak to them, and then everyone's sort of letting their hair down in the closing ceremony. It was good fun.
And what are the, you mentioned sort of, you know, minimum quarterfinals is the aim. Is that still what you're sort of taking into these tournaments coming up?
Yeah, definitely. So, well, we said we're going to have a little bit of a chat about it, because I think we maintain quarterfinals as minimum standard. Like, we've got to really try and stick with that. If we're getting 10 points a tournament, that would be equaling almost like 100 points. That'd be a really, really good outcome for us over the course of the season. But obviously there's times you won't hit that sort of quarterfinal. It might happen in whatever tournament, but so we'd like to kick on from a quarterfinal, make a semi, make a final. Just put yourself, we're giving ourselves the opportunities to do that, but like I said before, it's still a little bit frustrating. Little things are just such big margins in sevens.
And in terms of quite a few sort of new faces in the sevens teams this year, who do you think sort of stepped up in those sort of first two sevens weekends?
I thought Sam Pure was excellent through Dubai and Cape Town. He's really stepped up. So a guy coming out of the club game that John sort of brought in from Melrose, and he was really, really good. I thought Jamie obviously got injured day two in Cape Town. I thought Sam stepped up and played really, really well. And also Kyle Steyn coming into the programme.
Yeah.
Still relatively new to sevens, like, but he's a big athlete. You can see when he gets going on the sevens field, he's so difficult to stop. So I think with experience, he's only going to get better and better as well.
How Scottish is he sounding now? Is his accent changing at all?
Well, he lives with me, so back in South Africa at the minute. But I give him quite a lot of heat. His fashion sense in particular, he gets a lot of heat for that. He's got a strange fashion sense, but his accent's still fairly South African at the minute, but I hope I'm rubbing off on him.
Do you want to just sort of give us a bit of background on your sort of 15s career? Obviously, you spent a lot of time at Ayr, kind of had a sort of one or two games for Glasgow, and then up at London Scottish for a year or two.
Yep. Well, obviously, I'm an Ayr boy, so I played all the way through from the minis and then broke into the Ayr first 15 when I think 16, 17 I was, and I played my first game for the first 15 and then loved my time at Ayr, and out the back of that, ended up getting an academy contract with Glasgow 4 years ago, because it was just during the World Cup, so it was a good opportunity for me. I got some game time because boys were away and things like that. And then once boys came back from the World Cup, it was obviously there's so many boys contracting the pro team with a lot of good centres in the squad. So I got put on loan to London Scottish, which was meant to be like a 4 week, 5 week type thing with George Horn. And then the way it worked out, me and George ended up staying down there for the full season. And then out the back of that, I ended up signing for the following season with London Scottish and really enjoyed my time down in London playing there. And then obviously John Dale came down as a coach and the opportunity arrived with the sevens, and I thought it's a good gateway for me to get back into the Scottish system and hopefully try and get back to some 15s at some point in the future.
Is that the plan then? Is that what you would sort of like to do in the future, sort of make that switch back to full-time 15s?
Yeah, definitely. I'm loving sevens and I think it's really developing me in certain areas, but the aim for me would be to get back into 15s at some point in the future. I'm really, really keen to do that. I've actually not played a game of 15s now in so long. I'm actually quite keen to play a game, but definitely I'm sort of seeing it as a way to get back into 15s playing in the sevens. But like I say, at the minute, I'm loving playing in the sevens team.
I think if you look at someone like George Horn, who's obviously had that seven season, and it feels like that's really helped sort of transition into sort of the professional 15s game.
Yeah, absolutely. George is a great example. And then even guys like James Johnson at the minute. Chris Dean's played sevens. Like, you can see it. Like, a lot of these guys have played sevens and they've went through to 15s and are doing really, really well. So hopefully I can get a little shot at doing that as well.
And then obviously you said you were Ayr born and bred. You know, Ayr... Doing pretty well this season, and obviously getting ready for sort of the Super Six next year. How do you think Ayr are going to do for sort of the rest of the season? And you know, how excited are people down there for the Super Six in general?
Ayr, obviously, I went down and watched quite a few games, so they started the season absolutely flying, and then the last few while has been a few rocky results. But there was a huge performance against Melrose, beating Melrose down in the Green Yard. It's always a massive thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're a great team as well, Melrose. So I can see Ayr kicking on. I can only really see being an Ayr Melrose final, I think, for the club game. And I think they're two of the teams that will do really well at the back of the Super Six. I think Ayr's got a good infrastructure set up behind the scenes, a great academy programme, a great women's team, a good youth section all the way through, which is which is really important for this Super Six thing as well. So now I think the infrastructure's all there for Ayr, and they're looking at like a new ground and things like that as well. So now I think they'll kick on and do really well at the back of the Super Six.
Absolutely great. And I guess one of the questions we always ask people, and you know, you've done a lot of travelling with the Sevens, so who has been your worst roommate whilst with the Scotland Sevens team or with sort of age group rugby?
Oh, my worst roommate's easy. That's Max. Max McFarlane.
Oh, really?
He's awful. Snores, steals your kit. Like, he'll rock up to training wearing your clothes. He's a nightmare. And he snores the whole time as well.
Absolutely great. Awesome. Well, look, thanks very much for coming on the pod. And look,
oh, no problem.
Good luck with Hamilton and Sydney.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me, guys.
Thanks a lot, mate.
Merry Christmas.
See ya.
Yeah, have a good one.
Cheers. Yeah, Merry Christmas, guys.
Great to hear from Robbie there. Sounds like they've had a pretty decent start to the season, couple of quarterfinals, just losing to the big teams, Fiji and New Zealand and South Africa and stuff like that. How do you guys think they'll kick on for the rest of the season?
Just one thing, they did actually lose to Spain in South Africa.
Yeah.
I did watch that.
Well, maybe that's not that good.
Yeah. I think they're in a good place. I think like that minimum quarterfinal standard, it just shows the progress they've made from like even 5 years ago when the Sevens team were a bit of a joke. Like,
and about to get cut.
Well, yeah, exactly. They weren't, you know, washing their face. And I think it's, you know, there's that level above of like South Africa, New Zealand in particular, Fiji, maybe even England, who they will struggle against.
Yeah.
But I think they can beat anyone else. And they've proven that they can still, I don't know if they've never beaten Fiji, have they?
I don't think so.
They definitely did in the Steve Laurie on the Property Rugby Club was saying they beat them in the final at Murrayfield, sort of back in like 2010 or something.
Oh right, okay. I think they seem to be in a good place.
Yeah, I think you're right. I also think getting those early kind of quarterfinals makes a massive impact because obviously how you perform in the prior event impacts your ranking in the future event. So it's almost like if you start off badly, that can kind of like build up, and it makes it harder to come back from.
Mm.
So yeah, obviously getting those quarterfinal results, literally just losing to South Africa in South Africa, which is sort of a really, really good result. Mm. And I think we sort of talked about it previously, but I think last year, obviously Scott Riddle's last year's captain, it was a bit of a transition year.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Appointing two young co-captains as well to sort of lead that.
Yeah, and I think you've had people like Robbie Ferguson and like Harvey Elms, people who have come in last year, probably took a few tournaments to kind of get up to speed and are now actually kind of starting to kind of stamp their authority on games.
Mm-hmm.
And Robbie talked about it there, he's looking to make that return to 15s. Do you think that the Sevens program is beginning to sort of prove its worth as a sort of development tool for the ultimate, for like the 15s game in the Scotland national side? Or do you think it's still got a long way to go?
I think it just depends on the player. I think like obviously George Horn has opportunity and took it.
Yeah.
There's maybe a few young guys in that team who'd be looking to get full 15s contracts eventually.
Yeah.
It's a difficult one because you obviously have to balance that with having seven specialists who you can roll out every week and trust to perform. But I mean, even like, you know, Darcy Graham had a wee shot at it and it seemed to be pretty good for him. So
yeah.
I think it's nice just to kind of, you can like occasionally drip feed some younger guys in who maybe aren't getting game time at the pro clubs.
I guess it's been a bit of a question mark about whether the club game is a high enough standard to kind of set you up for kind of professional rugby, and maybe more so for backs, but whether they've sort of, you could see that as a better kind of stepping stone into that game for people like George Horn and Darcy Graham, like you said, rather than them maybe playing for like Hoyk week in, week out.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe Super Six will change that a little bit. Because actually, now that it comes to a slightly higher standard, there's less of a need to kind of get that exposure.
But I suppose it's good to hear from someone like Robbie Ferguson, who is on a full-time sevens contract, that 15s is still in his thoughts.
Yeah, definitely.
And that clearly is an option that's been probably presented to him by the SRU, I'd like to think.
I just think it was, again, someone like, obviously, Robbie Ferguson, who's only been in it for a year and has been now co-captain.
Yeah.
It's obviously a pretty like big statement that... You know, obviously Farndale's coming in, has got that real experience. And it feels like Farndale is a little bit transitioning into that kind of Scott Riddle-esque figure.
Probably.
Who's going to be sort of that seven specialist.
But I think we've seen from, like, particularly Richard Cockerell in the last year or so, being like, wait, what are all these sevens people doing? They're meant to be playing for pro teams. Like, I want them.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, I think Farndale played a couple of games. James Johnson as well. Like, it's...
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I quite like seeing that.
I guess you said, you look at the Edinburgh backline now, Christine, James Johnson, and Darcy Graham.
Yeah.
And Blair Kinghorn.
Kinghorn played a couple of tournaments.
Dougie Fife played a lot of sevens.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it was like Dougie Fife's way back into the program.
So what we're saying is we need Jack Cuthbert back in a 15 shirt.
He's still the seven. He's still in the sevens squad. It's ridiculous.
Slash Harriet's, isn't he?
Yeah, he's their one pro this year that they've used.
Yeah.
Jack Cuthbert.
I almost think these more back row players should be getting stuck into sevens.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just not, it wasn't the right timing. It feels like someone like a Jamie Ritchie could be a good forward sevens player. Sort of player I'd like to actually see play sevens.
Yeah, I think that Mungo Mason guy who's seems to come over from New Zealand, who's a back row, is in the seven squad at the moment.
Yeah.
Or in the wider squad at least.
Yeah. No, interesting to see.
Interesting to see. And we will keep in touch with the sevens guys after their next sort of round of tournaments. We'll get someone back on.
Yeah, it'd be good to try and like post every two legs, try and get someone on.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, definitely. Really nice to hear from them all and best of luck to them. So, the final segment of the year. Should we have a look back at the year that was and give out some gifts?
The year that was.
The year that was. Should we give out a standout player of the year? The accolade that everyone's waiting for, essentially. Alan, do you want to give us your player of the year? Why don't you start us off?
The prince that was promised. Christine, player of the year.
Shut up.
Drops the mic and walks out.
I think it's pretty hard to look past anyone other than Stu McAnally, to be fair. Mm-hmm. I think at the end of the day, he's gone from, I mean, it's a little bit of a year and a half, but he's gone from being almost like a bit part Edinburgh player to being probably... Edinburgh captain, Scotland captain, and probably one of the top three most important players for both club and country.
One of the best hookers in the world, I'd say.
And I think him and Fraser Brown are in top five or six hookers in the world.
Mm. You love Fraser Brown.
Oh, sorry, mate. I think having McAnally and Brown there, just when you compare it to the 10 years of Ross Ford
slash Scott Lawson slash Dougie Hall.
Yeah, plus another.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a great place to be. And McAnally.
Yeah. He was going to be my one as well.
Was he?
Matt, what have you got?
I was going to have George Horn, I think. Just coming in as a breath of fresh air, just being a really exciting player to watch. He's still got stuff to learn, but, you know, from where, once again, like the journey he's been on the last year.
Yeah.
From sort of like fringes of the Glasgow team, getting a shot, really taking it. He's been awesome. Just pleasure to watch.
Yeah, that first half against Argentina in the summer will live long in the memory.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
Exciting.
Something that Scotland have never done or not been able to do in decades.
Yeah.
That sort of high level is quite incredible.
I'm trying to think of any other sort of honourable mentions, but...
Yeah, I mean, Adam Hastings in that same sort of bracket. I think if you're going to chart those two sort of rise, he's definitely worth a mention.
We've done the awards pre-half five yesterday.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I think very quietly, Sean Maitland's gone from being someone...
Yeah, I was thinking that the other day.
That's a great show.
We might see is he actually going to start to now being like, he is so important to that Scotland World Cup team.
Yeah, yep. Definitely.
And he's as even close to being like Hogg, it's hard to see how he doesn't start the big games at the World Cup.
I think Hamish Watson's also had an excellent season for club and country.
Yeah, he only plays so well in big games.
Yeah.
Which is quite, I think, yeah, I'm trying to think of others. I mean, I think Greg Laidlaw won us that game against France in the Six Nations, and had we lost that, I think that would have been very, very bad.
Yeah.
Him coming on and really steadying the ship after we'd been pretty all over the place. That was pretty impressive.
I think
his value is pretty undeniable.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I think the sort of the consistency in Finn's game that we've been hoping for the 2 years has never really materialized.
It's never going to come.
Highlighted by, if anyone can see it, the pass he made in a game yesterday behind his own try line that got intercepted. And therefore, I think you talk about value to the Scotland team, Laidlaw is just so important.
Yeah, it's so crucial.
Like, yeah.
It's great having either George Horn or Ali Price coming off the bench, but Laidlaw's
just... You get a bit anxious with those two.
Yeah, you do. Like you get angry sometimes with Laidlaw, but I think because of how fast Russell and Hogg want to play,
yeah,
it's almost great having that kind of just softening effect of Laidlaw at
easy
night.
Easy boys.
It's like, calm it down.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Good year, though.
That's been a good year. Yeah.
Calcutta Cup win.
Yeah.
That's pretty decent.
That's number one moment.
Yeah.
That's got to be the best moment of the year.
Yeah, for sure.
Clearly.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
I nearly had a heart attack. It's unreal.
I was crying. I was in tears.
Yeah.
There was the crushing lows of Cardiff, and then...
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be, well, Cardiff times two.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're both pretty bad.
Yes. Yeah.
And then Glasgow at home to Scarlets in the semi was pretty bad.
Well, just like us to end on a low.
Exactly.
Let's end on those low moments and wish you all a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Well, I want to take this moment to say that I'll be leaving the Thistle Rugby pod to move to the Scottish Rugby Blogcast after my stellar performance. And they've offered me Monster Munch instead of Hula Hoops. Sorry,
can't compete with that.
I'd like to say that the hostilities have resumed.
Yeah.
The podcast wars continue. And they're going to step up in 2019.
Can't wait.
It's going to be great. But thank you again. Please keep in touch with us on Twitter at Thistle Rugby Pod, on Instagram, Thistle_Rugby_Pod. And then in the emails, get in there. They are thethistlerugby@gmail.com. You can find us on iTunes, find us on Acast, find us on any podcast platform that you so use. Have a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, guys, and we'll see you on the other side. Cheers.
Cheers.
See ya.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.